KBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. At an investment conference in Miami tonight, President Trump continuing his attacks against Ukrainian President Zelensky, blaming him.
Europe has failed to bring peace, and Zelensky probably wants to keep the gravy train going. I don't know what's the problem, but he hasn't been able. He's very upset that he wasn't invited. He could have come if he wanted to, but that he wasn't invited to Saudi Arabia. But he's been working for 3 years. There's never been even meetings or phone calls to stop this war. It's a horrible thing.
Andrew Lester, the 86-year-old Kansas City man who pleaded guilty to felony assault in the second degree for the shooting of Ralph Yarl, has died while awaiting sentencing. Lester entered a plea deal in the shooting of Yarl, a black teenager who mistakenly knocked on his door. He was expected to be sentenced on March 7th. Extreme cold warnings in effect from South Dakota to Texas. Wind chills tomorrow morning will be 20 to 40 degrees below zero in the northern plains and the upper Midwest. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Wisconsin beats Illinois. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers finally get a win over Illinois, 95-74. That ended a 9-game losing streak for the Badgers against the Fighting Illini. Head coach Greg Gard asked, did his players do a better job at getting rebounds, especially in the first half?
We did. You know, we tried. There was a few got away from us. Obviously, the ball bounces funny sometimes. You know, when we didn't get them, there was a group accountability that they were pretty astute in talking about what we needed to get cleaned up.
In Milwaukee, Marquette dominated Seton Hall 80-56. Cam Jones with 14 points. Chase Ross added 11. Baseball, Brewers outfielder Blake Perkins on being named a Gold Glove finalist for his performance last season.
Very grateful seeing the support from like my teammates, from the staff. Recognition from my peers around the league is very cool, and it's humbling and very grateful.
That's the Brewers' Blake Perkins with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey, it's Amanda with your new Wisco 411, and who's ready to jump into an icy cold lake? Come on, it sounds like fun, right? A polar plunge is a Wisconsin rite of passage, and one's coming up sooner than you think. February 22nd at Prokopski Boat Launch in De Pere. You can join a bunch of other brave and exciting souls who are ready to take the plunge, supporting more than 1,400 athletes of Special Olympics Wisconsin. Go ahead and register now. Go to wgbw.fm, click events to find out how.
From De Pere to Suamico, 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Boy, what a rough day I've had. Gotta tell you, start at 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife decided that she was going to take some healthcare decisions into her own hands, literally, and ripped out the feeding tube from her stomach, which led us to a race to the ER room at 3 o'clock in the morning, where we sat for 4.5 hours for the doctor to tell me, hey, you did all right. We don't have to do anything. Four and a half hours to be told, yeah, there's nothing more than what you did that can be done. And it made me a little angry, because that's one of those things that right at the very beginning, you could have triaged that. Right from the start, you could have gone, hey, well, you know, it's out, unless you want it back in, and we didn't. Could have gone, hey, just go home. Good on you. And save the, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 that we're going to end up spending on a trip to the ER, because understand the emergency room is the most expensive place to get health care. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, when something like this happens, I, not being a medical professional, ran to those who are. And sadly, when we got there, I knew it was going to be a long night, because the emergency room full. You know, midweek, full of people, and people who are sick and needing of real care. And in talking with the professionals working at the hospital, it all came down to we don't have enough people. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough staff. We don't have we're underpaid. We're overworked. And that's been my experience throughout this and my entire ordeal since my wife's accident. Look, we throughout our lives, we've used health care, you know, sparingly. You know, when you get sick, you go to your family doctor. They give you an antibiotic or something. You know, if you need a quick surgery, I had a gallbladder surgery a number of years ago. Yeah, in and out, you're done. Not this long-term kind of, I've got to go race to get care. It's eye-opening, and it's getting worse, and it has been getting worse since the pandemic. Things weren't great prior to the pandemic, but we were functional. And for all those people who told me, well, you know, we can't have national health care because of the wait times. I don't know if you've checked lately. The wait times are months long for a lot of things. So these urgent care, these ER places that charge you through the nose, these are a lot of people's only line of health care. And that really was apparent as I was sitting, you know, talking to people in the room about why they were there, what was going on. Because, I'm that guy. I'm the one who talks to people. But it got me to thinking that this administration, with Robert Kennedy Jr. As the head of Health and Human Services, are they going to make things better or worse? Is their leadership going to take us in a direction that's going to address some of the needs that we have as a nation in critical care or in the critical care arena? Or are they going to make it worse? Now, the New York Times had an interesting piece. Said, hey, there are massive cuts going on at the Department of Health and Human Services. And, you know, coming on the heels of the pandemic, which everyone agrees the worst public health crisis in a century. Everyone understands that. Firing, a large number of people who work for the government. Firing the people who track this stuff, firing people who might train the next generation of healthcare workers, firing people who are getting into the healthcare sector of our government, the VA. Is that a good thing? Is that the right thing? Or is it putting it at risk? And the answer is yes, it's putting us at risk. Of course it is, because that's what this administration is about. It's about the infinite number of nightmares that they keep throwing out in the hopes that, some of it gets by. And I was joking with someone where I said, because they said their husband and their child had some N5H5. It's no longer the flu anymore. It's got a number. And I'm going, wow, I'm really looking forward to the day where we don't know any of this stuff. We're just surprised by it. And it's over quickly, and we don't have to fret about the knowledge of what's coming to get us. Thank you, Donald Trump, for giving us the bliss of ignorance. And I say that facetiously, but not really. Because, I'm a big believer in good policy can make lives better. We've seen what bad policy does. It gave away our trade. It gave away our manufacturing. It's bottomed out. The ability for workers to join and form unions. It's harmed our social safety programs. It's done all this bad policy has done an awful lot to screw the American worker. But good policies done right, done with the right frame of mind, can make lives better. And I point to the New Deal. The New Deal made lives better. And look, I know you can't go back and dig up FDR and recreate that era, but you can start talking about what it is we as Americans demand from our government. I'm seeing all these articles popping up from really smart people saying, shrinking the size of government isn't going to make it more efficient. And you go, hey, dummy, that's not the point. The point is not to make it efficient. Their point is to destroy it, to privatize it, to get it out of the hands of we the people so we lose say over how things are done. They don't trust us. They don't want us to have a say in how our country is run. And the quicker we wake up to that reality, the easier it's going to be to come up with the real solutions that we need. None of those people in the ER wanted to sit there for the 4.5 hours that I sat there, the 14 plus that another woman sat there waiting for a bed. Nobody wanted that. Nobody wanted to be warehoused in a waiting room while they're waiting for tests to be done or rooms to open up. They wanted the care that they need. Now, as I'm told, it's not that the hospital didn't have beds. It's they didn't have personnel to take care of the beds. It's kind of like, and I, you know, my mind went to, you know, you go to a restaurant and only half of the restaurant is open. You know, the other, that wing over there is closed. There are tables, but there's nobody sitting at them because they don't have staff to deal with them. And, you know, it's better to have you stand in line angry than sitting down, you know, waiting to order angry. And this is what we've done to our healthcare system. Really expensive. I got a stack of bills on my desk, probably, you know, $3 million at this point. And you ask yourself, when do we address this crisis? When do we say enough is enough? Not one person in that ER was thrilled to be there, was happy to be there, said, hey, this is where I'm going to get care. This was their last option. And my hope out of all of this, and every time I bring this up, because I've talked about this a couple of times over the years, of having to go to an ER and having to, you know, sit and wait for lengthy periods of time, which seem frivolous and not necessary, because we don't believe in healthcare. We don't believe in investing in infrastructure. We don't believe in investing in what if. And we're now moving towards not investing in research or technology or infrastructure or the future. We've got a bunch of oligarchs grabbing the last dollars and the last wealth that they feel they can get. And at the end of it, it's going to be you and me and all of us holding the bag. Remember those eggs we were told were going to be cheap? Remember that gas that was supposed to be cheap? I really, and I've told you this before, I really thought the CEO class, a little bump down, not a lot, a couple of pennies, a little bit the point to go, hey, look, Trump came into office, like Reagan, when he came into office, put his hand on the Bible and the hostages were released. You know, the second that Trump came into office, I thought, you know, like 10%, you know, a good little cut in costs. So you go, see, Donald Trump, yeah. They didn't do it. They didn't do it. And they never are. They're never going to do it. They're never going to give up their profits. And this is where, again, we, you, me, us, we got to be a little bit smarter. I want to hear your thoughts. Yell at me if you have to. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jenny Rollins Shea from the Center for American Progress is going to be here to talk about gas prices. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you remember, again, go back to day one. Day one, life was going to be awesome. Things were going to be great. It was going to be terrific. It was going to be tremendous. There was going to be progress. Eggs. were going to be 99 cents a dozen. And gas, well, we were just going to give that away. At least that's what we were sold, right? I mean, look, all campaigns come around and, you know, tell us that, you know, they're going to, you know, change the world and, you know, it's going to be all rainbows and sunshine and puppies. Egg prices never higher. Never higher. Where are gas prices going to go? Because, again, it was the eggs and gas. That's what all my red hats were saying. That's the reason we got to get rid of Biden. It's the eggs and the gas. So we see what Trump's done with eggs. Let's find out where gas prices are going. And that's why I've asked Jenny Rollins-Shea to come share some thoughts. She's the director of public lands at the Center for American Progress. She's got some thoughts on how Doug Burgum and the Trump administration probably going to make gas worse, too. Jenny, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And you're totally right. Big promises made on gas prices. I think the promise was cutting in half in the first year. And based on the moves we've seen so far, that is not at all likely.
And look, you know, it's no president could ever make that unless we were going to socialize it. And nothing about this administration says government anything. In fact, destroy government. I would argue by destroying, you're making it probably worse just by doing that, let alone being surrounded by the CEO class who just want to gouge our eyes out.
Exactly. I mean, the gas prices are not controlled by the president, but drill, baby, drill in practice really means padding the pockets of big oil, not addressing the needs of everyday Americans. And some of these moves that Trump is...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, maybe a flurry or two tonight, a low near 8. A mixture of sunshine and clouds, highs warm up to the mid-20s, and with a sunny sky in the low 20s for Friday. Even warmer for the weekend. Currently it's 12 degrees.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself, surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, with Jenny, I was being a little, you know, a little thrown out there, what should we be doing? And look, you know, they're in the think tank world. Their job isn't to say, you know, this is what you do. They're just saying, here, these are the facts. And as Jenny laid out, facts are gas price is probably going to go up. I threw it out there, you know, to be facetious, to go, hey, look, you know, go take a picture because they're going to really booger up the environment. Hey, go remember a sunset for your children and, you know, trees and all of that stuff so that maybe your kids will remember something. But my next guest is somebody who I'm going to ask that question. What do we do? Democrats don't seem to have a plan, don't have an idea of where we're going yet. Or maybe, as I've been saying, they aren't the saviors. They're the tools. And maybe we need to get new tools. Which is why I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts with us. Rich is the host of Ojeda Live. You can catch that every weeknight at 8:30, I believe, on YouTube. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime. I always enjoy being on your show, Rick.
So I've been saying, you know, look, you know, politicians, they're just tools to get the things we need done. Maybe we need new tools. You one of those tools?
Well, I don't like to consider myself a tool, but I will tell you that, you know, I think that there are a lot of things that we need to start doing. And you know, the Democrats, you know, they need to stop being the good guy all the time. You know, sometimes they got to be willing to daggone, you know, knuckle up. And that's the problem that we have is that, you know, they want to take all these other different approaches. But the truth is we got to get down and dirty with these people. You know, these Republicans are not good people. So why should we daggone bend over for them and always act like we're the ones that are going to turn the other cheek? I don't believe in turning the other cheek. You know, I think that right now we are watching our democracy be dismantled. And yet, you know, nobody seems to really want to get in there and fight about this. And I think that it's important that we do. I think that it's important that we have people out there that we can find to run for office that can actually flip some of these seats. You know, I still find myself amazed that Lauren Boebert and Marge the Trainwreck Green have now won like four congressional races. You know, you mean to tell me you can't find somebody in Lauren Boebert's district that has education, that can speak to the people, that's a person that is well-liked within the community? Because that's what you've got to do. The same thing with Marge the Trainwreck Green. And as much as I hate to say this, you know, maybe a person of color is not going to be able to beat her because her district is so racist. I mean, look, you know, Marcus Flowers ran the greatest race 2 years ago in the country, and he lost within 15 minutes after they closed the polling stations because no matter how amazing he was, the people in that district wouldn't vote for him.
Right.
And then a one-star general just ran against her this time, and the same thing, and he was also a man of color. And, you know, I guarantee you both of those people are amazing and we would benefit for them in Washington, D.C., but they can't win in that district. So we need to put Democrat boots on the ground in those districts and find the people that can flip that seat from red to blue.
No. And look, you're absolutely right. And you also have to have a message. And sadly, right now, the Democratic brand is, even Democrats are saying, is tarnished because they don't have that alternative. And right now, look, you've got Musk and Trump running this country into the ground. You've got a bunch of bullies who are just running roughshod over our government. We need people who are going to stand up. Yes. But also people who are going to stand up with a vision on the direction we want to go. As they're doing this, this is what we want to do. And I think I haven't seen that yet.
Every single person that we know right now that have lost their jobs. So we're talking 1,000 people that work for the Veterans Administration, plus all the probationary jobs that are government jobs. You know, the Democrats need to be reaching out to every single one of them, because guess what? A lot of them absolutely voted for Donald Trump, which is why they're like, I can't believe it. We thought that he was going to get the, you know, we thought he was going to go after the black and brown people, not the white people. And I'm going to tell you, that was the exact verbiage that was used in West Virginia when a buddy of mine spoke to a bunch of people and said, what are you going to do when they go after your Social Security? And their answer to him was, Donald Trump's only going to take the people that are of color. So you know, what needs to happen is the Democrats need to be reaching out to a lot of these people that voted for Donald Trump that now have lost their jobs. And look, it doesn't matter. If they give them their jobs back in 6 months, they're still going to suffer for the next 6 months. And it should be enough to where they say, never again will I support these liars, these tyrants that told everybody what they wanted to hear. And then the moment that they got in, they did their bidding. And it's absolutely sickening, the things that they have done. You know, I mean, Donald Trump claimed that, oh, I have nothing to do with Project 2025, know nothing about it. And then the first day he's in office, he signs like 16 executive orders that literally enact Project 2025. So, you know, until these people start waking up and realizing that they were lied to, you know, but once again, the Democrats have got to be there to convince them that says, look, you know, we told you the truth and we're going to continue telling you the truth. You know, these people lied to you, and that's why you are where you are. But make no mistake about it. We can fix this. If we take back the House and we take back the Senate in 2026, we can stop Donald Trump from doing any more damage. And the damage that Donald Trump is doing right now, I guarantee you there's going to be quite a few things that will be impeachable. And I'm running for Congress in 2026. And I'll tell you right now, I don't have a problem pushing articles of impeachment against anybody. I actually was able to do that exact very same to a corrupt Supreme Court justice in West Virginia, and we actually had him removed and he went to jail. So I'm at the point where I'm in this fight and I'm ready to fight this battle.
No, we need more Rich Ojeda's running for Congress and all political offices, people with the passion clearly you have, but also with the idea that we can make this a better place. Now, what's interesting to me is you watched the criminals on January 6th and how the right rallied around them as victims, as heroes. You know, we see all these, you know, the massacre that happened last week on Thursday and Friday as they cut an enormous number of jobs in the federal government. I didn't see that same kind of solidarity on the left of, hey, you know, these folks, they've been mistreated, they've been wronged. You know, we should organize them.
You're absolutely right, and that's the thing. That's the problem. You know, right now the only thing they're thinking of in Washington D.C. is money. That's all they think about. Huh? What do we need to do to raise more money? Let's send more emails out talking about how we're going to fight these battles, and we're going to attach, you know, donate $5, $10, $25 to it. Look, put your boots on the ground. We're not going to find anybody to win this. Look, 2026 is, this is the truth. This is the absolute truth. This is the most important election of our lives. And we hear that every 2 years. It's the most important election of our lives. This one is, because make no mistake about it, if we can't bring checks and balances to Donald Trump and his boot-licking sycophants, he will never leave in 2028. They will do everything in their power to do away with that and just stay in power. And there's a lot of things that we need to do. We need to start having some people that are running for office that are willing to bring things up that most Republicans don't want to deal with. It was kind of like when I was a senator in West Virginia. Even the Democrats said, don't you dare push medical cannabis because you'll make a lot of enemies. And you know what I said? I don't care. I don't care if I make enemies. I'm going to do this because my brothers and sisters that picked up a rifle and manned the post struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I would much rather them have medical cannabis than to take these pills that they give us that attack our kidneys and our liver that will make all of us daggone, you know, needing an organ by the time we're 65 years old. So, you know, once again, I pushed it. And in the end, I won that battle and West Virginia become the 29th state. We need to have people out there that's more than willing to come to the table and come up with ideas that people can get behind. You know, I've been talking about a nationalized pay scale for teachers. Because if we had a nationalized pay scale, like in the military, a private that works at Fort Drum, New York, makes the same amount as a private that works at Fort Lewis, Washington. The only difference is the private in New York gets a cost of living allowance that is a little more because the prices are more there. If a teacher with a bachelor's degree, this is how much they make. And every 5 years they get a bump. And oh, by the way, this is salaries that that all teachers can get behind. I'm in North Carolina right now. Teachers here are 44th in the country in pay. Yet North Carolina is ninth in terms of growth. So if it's ninth in terms of growth, our teachers should be at least ninth in terms of pay. So if we're not going to do that, then let's create something that will allow teachers and school service personnel, and don't ever forget about school service personnel, to be able to get behind something. Democrats need to come up with these visions and they need to support them. And that's how we do this. We just can't sit back and just wait for Donald Trump to burn the country down. Because once again, he may burn down the very structure that we need to be able to get this thing back. So we got to start getting busy, putting boots on the ground, and that's it. I don't want to hear these people. You know, if the Democrat Party wants me to go to Washington, D.C. and fundraise for the Democrat Party, then they better get out there and bust their ass and help Democrats win office.
Let me ask you about, you brought up the military. And I was reading a story over at military.com that, you know, talking about the veteran data that was swept up by Musk and his Doge trolls at the Treasury. And the headline was Infinite Nightmares at Once, which is, you know, the perfect kind of frame of what we're seeing out of this administration. From a military, you know, from a retired military personnel mindset, how bad is this administration so far been? And we're only weeks into this. How bad has this been for you and your brothers?
Well, I will tell you right now, you know, it's going to get really, really bad. And the reason for that's because of what they've done. They've killed probationary jobs. They killed over 1,000 positions. And those 1,000, it's more than 1,000. We're talking doctors, nurses. We're talking, you know, special care. You know, they're killing the programs that educate families about PTSD and traumatic brain injury, which basically gives them, you know, the tools to be able to deal with a loved one that struggles from post-traumatic stress disorder or traumatic brain injury. By the way, I've got both. You know, but I mean, you know, the things that they're doing, the things that they're cutting, it's going to make it even harder for the average veteran to actually get that appointment. You know, when there's not enough people to set those appointments for you, or they've gotten rid or they gutted that part of the VA, you know, what are you going to do? It already takes a pretty good amount of time, depending on where you're at, to be able to get Veterans Administration care. Now, I come from West Virginia, and I will tell you that if you got a dental appointment, you may have gotten a dental appointment. They'll tell you, okay, your dental appointment is in 9 months. That's reality. That is reality. That's going to get far worse. If they don't even try to get rid of dental care, you know, altogether. But what they're doing is absolutely hurting veterans. And oh, by the way, they're already talking about coming after our disability. Remember, I received my retirement because I spent 24 years in the military. I gave my adult life to this country. And while I was there, you sent me to combat zones multiple times. I was in daggone humanitarian areas where people had died by the hundreds of thousands. You know, we breathed in burning bodies. We breathed in smoke from burn pits. We've been exposed to toxins like you have never seen. And now they're talking about going after our disability, saying that, you know, we don't think the veterans deserve to get their retirement and their disability. I get my disability because you broke me. You broke me. You know, they're already talking about going after Social Security. Once again, and now they're trying to say that if a veteran draws disability, then he sure can't draw Social Security. If you don't want me to have my Social Security, then you write me a check right now for every penny that I paid into it, because I deserve my Social Security and I want it. And unless we get together and start fighting this, and let me tell you something, these are winning solutions. These are the things that Democrats need to be telling people. We're not just going to tell them that they're not going to be able to touch your disability, veterans, but we're also going to make sure that they don't take you off of the rolls for Social Security. That's what the Democrats need to be talking about, and they're not. It's friggin' crickets. So get off your asses and get to work.
Get to work. So from now until till Election Day, what are you doing?
I'm going to be absolutely knocking on doors, shaking hands, doing everything I can to meet as many people as possible. You know, the new lines, my district actually shrank. It used to be 6 full counties and 3 half counties, and now it's just 6 full counties. And I'm already reaching out to people in those areas there, and people are talking about setting up events. You know, if you live in the district that I'm in, which is the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina, you know, and you would love to invite me to your home to speak to your family and friends, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm ready. I am ready to hit the ground running.
So outside of the military stuff that you've spoken very passionately about, you know, what are the issues that you think in your district? Look, there's a lot of things nationally we could be talking about, but specifically to your district, what is it that you're focusing on?
Well, you know, obviously, in terms of the district, you know, it's about trying to bring capabilities to North Carolina. You know, we want better jobs. We want better pays, things like that. I mean, those are things that are absolutely crucial. But I also have other ideas of things that, you know, I kind of, you know, think, you know, I would like to push. I personally would love nothing more. And once again, you know, people talk about it. I'll do it on day one. I want to sit down with somebody and I want to put together legislation that brings back something that resembles the fairness doctrine. If I can't just bring the fairness doctrine back altogether, because once again, why should we not require honor and integrity in our media? And I believe that if we do that, I think that it will help all of us, because once again, you know, places like Canada, places like Germany, I mean, you know, their news media is far superior to ours because they have requirements that integrity matters. So, see, that's something that I would love to absolutely push for. There's also some things that people may think are kind of wild, but I kind of think that I would love nothing more than to push lobbyists being made to wear body cameras. At least if they're on the property, why not? Because here's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had the ability and you knew that your representative has this code number, and you can go on computer, you can type in that code number, and you can watch every single conversation that they have with lobbyists, then I guarantee you they will be far less likely to sell you down the river if they know you're watching. And oh, by the way, this isn't just, okay, they'll just have to wear it when they're in their offices. If a lobbyist is caught speaking to a member of Congress, and I don't care if it's in Walmart, and they don't have their body camera on, they will lose their license to lobby. You know, these are things that I don't think that people in Washington, D.C. should be allowed to play the stock market. You know, we've got, and once again, and I know everybody talks about term limits, and look, here's the deal. You're never going to get these people to vote for term limits unless you do something like this. Let's say 20 years and out, like the military, and at the 20-year mark, you leave with a retirement of 50% of your base salary, which is what the military gives. And this is the only way anybody would ever go for this, because once again, you know, they want to stay there forever. One reason, because they can use that insider trading and make themselves absolute millionaires and billionaires. And once again, we need to stop that from happening. But think about this. There are 11 Republicans in the Senate, and there's a few Democrats that were there too, that actually voted to impeach President Clinton over that act. But here's the thing. That tells you they've been in there for over 40-some years. How much are they worth? Once again, $174,000 a year should equal up to this, but they're worth way more than that. Because why? Because they've used insider trading, and they've played the stock markets, and they've all won big. But once again, you cannot tell me that they relate to anybody in their district. How can you relate to me, the average guy out here, when you have been a millionaire for the past 40 years while you've sat in Washington, D.C. and did nothing but take care of your own daggone stuff that you want to do for yourself? Look, I'm radical, And look, I don't care. I'm very passionate about what I do. And you know what? If I got to fist fight somebody in an elevator, then that's what's got to happen. But at the end of the day, we got to take a stand, you know, and we need leaders that are willing to take a stand. And that's the problem. You know, we need leaders that aren't willing to daggone, you know, settle with some of this garbage that's out here. We have people that are being absolutely hurt. Their livelihoods are being ripped from them. And there's nothing that they can do about it.
No.
The Democrats should be absolutely doing everything in their power to make sure that every single person who has lost their job, whether they be Democrat or Republican, knows that we will right this wrong if you will help us turn this thing around.
Nope, that's it in a nutshell. Last question I've got for you, Rich. How can folks help? How can we find you? How can we help you? What can be done?
Okay, I do 8:30 every night, Eastern Standard Time, Ojeda Live on YouTube and Facebook. Follow me on there. Also follow the Turn Left Pack. Now, here in the very near future, we're going to start putting up my Act Blue link. You can go to those pages, and you'll be able to find the Act Blue link. Support my campaign. You know, my campaign. If you know somebody that lives in the 9th Congressional District, reach out to them and call them and say, hey, would you be willing to have a conversation with this guy? And look, I'll talk to Republicans too. I mean, at the end of the day, the Republicans are going to start waking up real soon that these jackaloons that they put in office are doing nothing but robbing everybody blind. You know, Elon Musk is out here killing organizations that don't even care about whether they're Democrats or Republicans. They're just killing them because why? Because they take that huge chunk of money that normally goes to those things and say, okay, look what we saved you all. It didn't save nobody nothing. You just killed 1,000 people's jobs and their livelihoods to feed their family. So what? So you can take this and add this to already the pile of money that you've so-called saved that you're just going to turn around and hand to the filthy rich of this country, because that's all you care about is daggone making sure that the top 1% gets everything. And oh, by the way, out of the $4.5 trillion the Republicans are pushing, 83% of that goes to the top 1%. That's Elon, that's Zuckerberg, that's Buffett, that's Bezos, those people. So if you're okay with that, then you're part of the daggone problem. We need that stuff to start going down to us. And make no mistake, none of it will ever trickle, because when they get more money, they buy a bigger plate.
There you go. Rich, I love you, brother. I wish you the best. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
Anytime, my brother, anytime.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda, I want to hear your thought. We certainly need more passion in the House of Representatives, and let the passions of the people rage. Isn't that what the House is for? There's a guy right there. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1997. And if you had theater tickets that evening to see Beauty and the Beast in Seattle, the show did not go on as planned. Musicians at the Fifth Avenue Theater, members of Local 76-493, had been on strike for a week. At issue was their compensation for performance. The union believed their wages were far below the industry standard for similar markets. The theater managers refused to budge. The union went out on strike, canceling 8 performances of the much-anticipated Disney Broadway musical. But this was the last night the theater stayed dark. Management brought in replacement musicians. The curtains rose with the scab musicians playing inside while the picketers marched outside. The Musicians Union had a long history in Seattle. Local 76 was first formed in 1898. 60 years later, they joined the Black Musicians Local, Local 493, integrating the union for the very first time. 18 members of the Local 76 participated in the Fifth Avenue Theater strike. 4 additional Disney musicians refused to play. Community solidarity for the strikers was strong. Each night, hundreds would join the picket lines.
as a brass band played outside the theater. Violinist Libby Poole Presley was impressed by this show of support, saying, "I was floored. Here were hundreds of people helping us out in a stunning show of labor and community solidarity. To us striking musicians, it felt like magic to have the power of that many people behind us. The magic of solidarity helped the musicians win a contract victory and end their strike."
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I tell you, there's one guy, I love him. I love Rich Ojeda. You got to love his passion. Wow. There's a lot there. There's a lot of passion in that guy. And look, these are the kind of folks that we need in the halls of power. These are the kind of folks who we need a regular, steady stream of. It's what the House was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a bunch of Rich Ojedas bringing the passions of the people into the House, not a bunch of folks who are triangulating on how they remain or they get popular. It's always been my belief, if you do the right thing, you're going to probably be okay. You do the right thing, you're going to get by. And sadly, you know, too many politicians haven't. And now Rich brought up term limits, and I've talked about this before. I'm not a term limit guy. Even on the presidential level, I don't think there should be term limits. I think that we have the ultimate term limiter, and that's you go to the polls and you vote for a person, and I want the best person. My problem with it, and you know, because that's my heart and soul. That's what I believe. In my head, I go, the sad reality is we haven't done such a good job. And we should be throwing a lot of people out. There should be a churn. There should be a turnover. There should be people who can, like Rich, run for office and be able to bring the passions of the people to the halls of power. Problem is, again, money. You go back to Citizens United, you go back to how much money has perverted our system, which again is another reason that I'm in favor of publicly funded elections. You get X amount of dollars, that's it. And you get, you know, people power, that's it. Let's see who runs the best campaign, builds the best mousetrap, however you want to frame that, and who has the best ideas. Instead, what we've got is a system that, you know, you're raising money constantly to enrich the big media companies. And we need to, quite frankly, take that back. There's a reason that working people on both sides of the political divide haven't gotten what they need or what they want or what they should, what they're entitled to. I hate using that word. But yeah, we're entitled to safe water and clean air and good schools and safe neighborhoods. We're entitled to, outside of the demand. And this is where the frustration for me comes. Because I know there are a lot of things that working people want, again, outside of the political divide, that we just don't get. Because we've got to feed our overlords. We've got to stoke the ego of Elon Musk. We've got to feed the Warren Buffetts. We've got to make sure that Wall Street is well, well taken care of. It seems, until we wake up, and maybe it's going to take that collapse. Maybe it's going to take that calamity, that chaos that Trump is bringing us. Maybe this is what we need. For us to demand better from our government. Whatever's going to be left of it at the end of this term. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, freespeech.org. If you want to check out the video, it's been an interesting week thus far. And look, we're only a couple weeks into this Trump presidency. Getting worse. See you back here next time.
I'm listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is Civic Media. Civic Media. This is Civic Media. Civic Media. This is Civic Media. Civic Media. Civic Media. Civic Media. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Civic Media. Civic Media. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
This is Civic Media. Civic Media. This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Sources tell ABC News that the Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, has asked top Pentagon officials to draw plans for an 8% cut. ABC's Louis Martinez.
We know that the Pentagon has identified these probationary employees who could be the ones that would be the most affected. We also know that the DOD has also provided lists to the Office of Personnel Management, essentially seeking exemptions for some of these individuals.
Relations between Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky and President Trump deteriorating rapidly. Trump tonight calling Zelensky a dictator without election, seeming to blame him for Russia's invasion. Zelensky saying Trump was living in a Russian-made disinformation space. A federal appeals court denying the Trump administration's request to lift the ruling, blocking Trump's executive order that would end birthright citizenship. Delta confirms that the airline's offering $30,000 to each passenger on board the plane that crashed earlier this week in Toronto. This is ABC News. A new murder mystery says